The headlines: Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the 1979 takeover of the U.S. embassy in Tehran proved that Washington is completely vulnerable. Israeli forces kill a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank following an alleged car ramming and stabbing attack. North Korea and its neighboring South Exchange missile fire near their sea border as tensions mount following military drills by Washington and Seoul. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half-hour: leader of the Islamic Revolution says those who think the U.S. is an untouchable power are wrong. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the 1979 takeover of the U.S. embassy in Tehran proved that Washington is completely vulnerable. He noted that the history of confrontation between Iran and the U.S. dates back to the CIA-orchestrated coup in Iran in 1953, but now the American politicians are hypocritically and shamelessly claiming that they are supporters of the Iranian people. The leader said that is an outright lie. Ayatollah Khamenei pointed to the riots of the past few weeks and said a recent intelligence report showed how the enemies had been planning to instigate chaos across different cities. The leader made the remarks in a meeting with students 2 days ahead of the anniversary of the U.S. embassy takeover in 1979. Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. Our correspondent Mona Kendil joined us earlier from the city to tell us what exactly happened.
The incident happened at one of the Israeli military checkpoints, West Ramallah Betur checkpoint. It seems that a Palestinian arrived with his vehicle at one of the Israeli military checkpoints and rammed his vehicle into a group of soldiers standing at the checkpoint. There was a video published by the Israeli military claiming that it was not an incident, it was a vehicle ramming attack. We are speaking about a Palestinian man, an old Palestinian man. He was shot by the Israeli soldiers there, and immediately the Israeli military said that he was shot dead. We are speaking about Habes Rayyan from the village of Bedoko, 54 years old.
Israel's former prime minister is boasting of a big victory as his party and his right-wing allies win just enough seats to form a narrow majority in the parliament.
We still have to wait for final results, but one thing is already clear. Our way, the way of Likud, proved itself. I remind you that after getting 52 seats last election, we are on the brink of a very big win.
Netanyahu has thanked voters for their confidence. His bloc of four parties has taken 62 of the Knesset's 120 seats. His main opponent, Prime Minister Yair Lapid, though, is insisting that the race is not over yet. He says nothing is final until the last envelope is counted. The final result could swing as votes are being tallied and is not expected until later in the week. For years, Netanyahu has been involved in a massive corruption scandal. He's been indicted on multiple bribery and fraud charges, but he denies them all. Reacting to the election results, Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya has said Netanyahu's comeback shows extremism and racism are growing in Israeli society. News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, the situation on the Korean Peninsula appears to be growing more unstable. For the first time in decades, North and South Korea have fired missiles landing in waters off each other's coasts. The South has launched three air-to-ground missiles and closed some of its air routes off the East Coast. Hours earlier, Pyongyang fired various types of missiles, one of which landed close to South Korean waters. According to Seoul, North Korea has launched a total of 17 missiles today. It also says that Pyongyang has fired more than 100 artillery rounds into the maritime buffer zone. Separately, one of the missiles fired by Pyongyang landed outside Japan's exclusive economic zone. Both countries have reacted to the missile launches by the North.
North Korea continues to provoke tensions on the Korean Peninsula while strengthening its nuclear missile programs. This cannot be justified for any reason, and the responsibility lies entirely on the North Korean side.
We will work closely with relevant countries, including the United States and South Korea, and we are determined to firmly protect our people's lives and peaceful livelihoods. Based on this situation, we will consider all options realistically without excluding anything, including counterattack capability, and continue to work on strengthening our defense capabilities fundamentally.
China has reacted too, saying it's closely following the developments on the Korean Peninsula. The foreign ministry spokesman says that Beijing hopes that all countries involved would work towards a political settlement. The U.S. and South Korea are conducting their largest ever air drills, flying hundreds of warplanes. The exercises will end on Friday, just hours ahead of its latest missile launches. Pyongyang called for a halt to the drills, calling them aggressive and provocative. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our correspondent Frank Smith, who's with us from the South Korean capital, Seoul. Also from Beijing, we have a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution, Mr. Kim Do-joo. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Frank in Seoul. Bring us up to speed on just how unstable the Korean Peninsula is right now.
Well, I think really we need to recognize the risk that's involved with these tit-for-tat joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises and missile launches from North Korea and missile launches from South Korea. It was just earlier in South Korean missile launching that one missile was completely lost after launch, and another missile landed 700 meters from a civilian area. So these ongoing joint U.S. drills and missile launch exchanges could potentially lead to some type of accident or miscalculation that could result in a broader conflict. So there are indications, at least from the U.S. side, that they want to negotiate with North Korea, but those are with conditions. The conditions being that the United Nations Security Council sanctions against Pyongyang remain in place. Those are really U.S.-backed sanctions that prevent North Korea from trading with the international community. North Korea also likely wants to be recognized as a nuclear power now, having enshrined a nuclear response should it be attacked. Here in South Korea, things have changed with conservative President Yoon Suk-yeol strengthening his alliance with the United States and indicating he was also going to boost his military and react more strongly to what his government views as North Korean provocations.
Kim Do-joo, give us your thoughts on China's response. Beijing has already said that it's closely following the developments on the Korean Peninsula. What would China like to see?
Well, I think the Chinese position has been consistent if there's a tension, if there's an escalation in the Korean Peninsula, which it will serve no interest for any country, including South Korea and North Korea, including that of China, Russia, and Japan. Probably it serves some interest of Washington, because if there's a destabilized situation here, you can imagine some of the industries, some of the firms from the business community, they might migrate to the U.S., serving the interests of U.S. efforts to bring back manufacturing. And also, it may serve the U.S. interest to contain China. They have been focusing Taiwan issue to challenge China, to provoke China already. So no, it's not in the interest of China, not in the interest of North Korea or South Korea. But we are seeing this issue is above this nuclear development in North Korea. It's really about a lack of a peace agreement, lack of trust, and the lack of relationship between, say, North Korea and the United States. And so there's, I would say, too much confrontation, too much hostility between the U.S. and North Korea, between South Korea and North Korea. So you do see the problems as long as there's a move from the other side, and then there's a response from another side. So the situation is very easy to escalate into further tension instead of lowering down, instead of remaining calm and remaining with good communication between different sides that's a bit unfortunate.
Staying with you, Mr. Zhu, how do you view the joint drill, specifically this episode right now between the United States and South Korea? Do you see them as aggressive and provocative?
I would say, of course, you know, in particular from North Korean point of view, that's aggressive. That's basically a preparation to attack North Korea. That's from their view. But even as outsiders, you know, people can ask the question, is it truly necessary to have this largest ever, you know, drills involving hundreds of war planes? And also the basically you know, this is a mock attack 24 hours a day, you know, mock attack against whom? I mean, the target is clear. That's a mock attack against North Korea 24 hours a day. If that's not a threat, what is a threat to North Korea? And clearly it is a threat. I think North Korea is fully justified to respond, to warn the South and the US not to have this kind of military drills, because it is very aggressive, it is very clear. But of course, you can say, you know, should North Korea to, you know, send missiles close to South Korea? That's another question, probably. Unfortunately, you do see escalation, I mean, starting from among this kind of military drills, which also involve the nuclear submarine from the United States. That means a potential nuclear attack against North Korea. Again, I mean, North Korea, I would say, is justified to respond to these military drills, and it's a bit irresponsible for the U.S. to stage such kind of large scale, which involves nuclear submarines in Northeast Asia, because it obviously will destabilize the region. But of course, it's unfortunate to see this strong response from North Korea side.
And lastly, Frank Smith, do you agree with Mr. Kim Do-ju saying that the lack of trust between North Korea and the United States is definitely exacerbating the situation?
Yes, it is. I mean, if we dial back a few years back to 2018, here in South Korea, we had Moon Jae-in and the engagement policy. He arranged summits between himself and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. He arranged the summits between North Korean leader Kim and former U.S. President Donald Trump. And for all his faults, Trump did manage to calm tensions on the Korean Peninsula with that summitry. Unfortunately, when Chairman Kim in North Korea promised a moratorium on long-range missile tests and nuclear tests in exchange for an end to the hostile policy from the U.S., over 2 years, he really got nothing. And so now, following a change in government, a conservative hardline administration in South Korea, it stands to reason that he's going to, you know, redevelop his missile and even his nuclear programs. So really, this falls, I believe, on the shoulders as well of the U.S. and South Korea to reach out to North Korea and try to get to negotiations before something bad happens in this irresponsible escalation of tension here.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Frank Smith joining us from Seoul, and also senior fellow at Pangol Institution, Kim Do-ju joining us from Beijing. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. But do stay tuned. There's plenty more to come here. Welcome back. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says the grain shipping corridor to get food out of the country needs reliable long-term protection. Zelensky also said Russia must realize it will receive a harsh global response to any measures disrupting food exports. That came after Russian President Vladimir Putin called on Ukraine to guarantee the safety of Black Sea traffic. Moscow has suspended participation in a UN-brokered grain shipment deal. It cited a Ukrainian drone attack on Russian ships in Crimea. Kiev has dismissed the allegation as a false pretext. Russia has called on the UN to obtain the required guarantees from Ukraine. The political stalemate in Northern Ireland caused by the UK's withdrawal from the European Union drags on. The country's political parties missed a legal deadline for the formation of a power-sharing government following an election in May that put Sinn Féin nationalists in power for the first time. And in the absence of a government, the devolved nation now looks on course for another poll. All of this among a punishing cost of living and energy crisis. Saeed Purazo has this report.
The Northern Ireland Parliament buildings, the Storma, the cornerstone of the Good Friday Agreement, not functioning properly for months. A last-ditch attempt last week to elect a speaker and former power-sharing government fell through. First Minister-designate Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill did not mince her words.
Geoffrey Donaldson and the DUP have left us all at the mercy of the heartless and dysfunctional Tory government, whose own survival is all that ever counts. The Tories care less for the consequences of their dire policy decisions and their political choices on the lives of workers and families here.
The unionists who want Northern Ireland to remain part of the UK say they won't enter power sharing unless the Northern Ireland Protocol is scrapped.
It is about unionists feeling that they have been made second-class citizens as a result of a protocol that diminishes and undermines our place in the United Kingdom.
The problem he's talking about lies in these dark blue waters.
This is the Irish Sea border for trade, enshrined in the Northern Ireland Protocol, part of the post-Brexit withdrawal agreement aimed at avoiding a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. The unionists here say they want the protocol scrapped altogether. Westminster now says it's prepared to make changes to parts of it. But to the EU, that is anathema.
The EU has proposed ways to make the protocol work, but they were turned down by the UK government, which has vowed unilateral action. But while the unionists say this is all about their position in the UK, others say there is more to the story.
The protocol, if we want to be real about it, actually benefits people here in the north of Ireland, because we get the benefits of both the EU market and, of course, what has happened after Brexit. But what has happened is that unionists have used the protocol as a ruse, because they do not want to share power with a nationalist Republican First Minister. This is what this is really about.
There is the political theatre at Stormont and Westminster, and there is the reality for those grappling with the cost of living and energy crisis induced by Brexit and the Western-backed war in Ukraine. Unless there is compromise, it's difficult to see what another election costing £6.5 million will achieve, because the protocol problem will still exist, and so will the threat to the Good Friday Agreement. Saeed Purazo, Belfast, Northern Ireland.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
سی و دو
چومن
یعنی
بازار
It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy.
Hello there, and welcome to the second segment in our two-part edition of Bazaar. Last week, we discussed the knowledge-based production of potatoes in agriculture and how technology has helped expand this sector. This week, the program focuses on livestock rearing and all that goes into producing high-quality meat and dairy. Yum, yum. So stay with us as we check out their economic and national food security contributions. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested. Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs. Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
In 2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit. Khorasan Razavi province specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechie, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini-tubers. So what is a mini-tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received 3 consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress. As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products. The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs 1/5 of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging, and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines, and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production.
Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons.
However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-grey zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
Well, I'm going to go into a several-minute silence because my good friend and colleague is out there on the field to give you guys a wonderful report. Take it away.
In a world grappling with coronavirus, a significant number of health-related companies have been looking for a solution to contain the spread of the virus. With the development of various testing methods, there has been a huge spike in demand for the virus sampling kits, and especially the sampling swabs.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm just so very tired of wearing masks. But what can I say? Ever since the pandemic took the world by storm, our life has changed in an unpredictable way. One of the prominent changes is the development of sampling technology to meet the evolving need of COVID-19 testing. Today, we came to Damahi Biotechnology Company to see how the sampling swabs that we see everywhere are produced. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me. At the start of the outbreak, most of the sampling swabs were imported into the country, and the domestic supply chain had been inconsistent. For this reason, this Iranian company in biotechnology decided to take steps towards promoting local sampling swabs on a large scale. When it comes to production, the swabs are produced in two different forms: oral swabs and nasal swabs. Anyway, let's take a look at the production line. All right, the production process of the sampling swabs begins in this unit. At this stage, after the plastic handles are imported into this factory, they go through the swab flocking machine to form the header. Actually, when I look at it, it kind of looks like the ear cleaning swabs that we use on a day-to-day basis. But in fact, they are completely different. These headers are actually made of fibers, so it's totally something else. When the swabs are produced, they get to this stage for quality control and cleaning before they get to the packing hall. And finally, they pass through the sealer machine for pressing. But I should mention that the swabs are not finalized at this stage. They have to go through the sterilization process, and by the end of the day, the sterilized swabs are transported to different laboratories all across the country. In case you wonder about the head of the swab, unlike how we thought earlier that it looks like the ear-cleaning swab, the foam-headed material eliminates the possibility of adhesive residue contamination. So by the end, the sterilized sampling swabs are distributed for field or home testing to meet the growing need of the country. Even though it looks very simple, the production procedure of the sampling swabs is very complicated. Now, thanks to the development of such diagnostic tools, the world has managed to curb the pandemic in numerous ways. I've been Sarah Dema. Stay safe and bye-bye.
Many thanks for that fantastic adventure. That wraps up our program for today. Don't forget to leave us your feedback. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'inur rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. One of the keys of life is protecting our body from harm. When it comes to the body, there are many things that can harm our bodies, be it external or be it internal. So obviously, me and you, we take extra care to our bodies when it comes to the external factors. Where, for example, there's something that comes my way, if it's a car, I move away. If there's a bee that might sting me, I run away. And so on and so forth. There are many things that we can see from the outside that we always try to protect ourselves from. But how about internally, when there might be plenty of diseases within me that I am not aware of? Now, a lot of scholars, and I know a lot of big mujtahids and marjas, ayatollahs, they get themselves checked almost every month, some of them every two, some of them every 3 months, even though they don't feel no pain. But they still go do a medical check and a general checkup just to make sure that they are healthy and fit. And obviously, they're not doing that because, you know, they want to live long and they love life. No, because it is a requirement on me and you to take care of our bodies so we can perform our duties to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Even the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says when it comes to us taking care of our bodies, to the extent that he says, "Inna Allah la ilaha illahu la yadfa'u bis-sadaqati ad-da." Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is He who there is no one but Him, and He pushes away the diseases from oneself by paying charity. So you pay charity for the sake of not getting sick, for the sake of not getting any diseases. And then we see that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi says, Al-hamiyatu ra'su kullu dawa'. Dieting, taking care of your body, is the head of every healthiness. If you want to be healthy, you need to avoid diseases, then all you have to do is diet. And dieting means what? Not that you starve yourself, not that you become anorexic, but no, dieting means you eat healthy. You don't eat junk food. You don't eat pizza and chips and all this nonsense. You don't eat, you know, fast food meals, which is what people eat these days, mainly heavily, and especially in the West, where people depend on McDonald's and Hungry Jack's and KFC's and Red Rooster and what have you. All these chain restaurants, they're making billions of dollars yearly, but billions of people around the globe are getting sicker by the day. So when we say diet, meaning eat healthy fruits, vegetables, you need to take care of your body. Soft drinks are full of sugars, loaded with carbohydrates. It is destructive to the body, and we consume it as chocolates. Why? Because it's sweet. It might be sweet. It might be delicious. But guess what? You are the one who's getting harmed. Your body is feeling the pain. When, God forbid, a person gets cancer or any other disease, he has no one to blame but himself. And according to this hadith, we will be held responsible for all the pain and diseases that we cause ourselves. Let us take a short break, then we continue right after.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree,
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته دارم گفته دی. اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره، همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اونقدر ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in the Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. We said one of the keys of life is taking care of our bodies. And we need to make sure we avoid any pain that could come to my body. And most of the diseases that we get in our bodies are in fact a result to our food. Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, alayhi salamullah, he says, قِلَّةُ الْأَكْلِ يَمْنَعُ كَثِيرٌ مِّنَ الْعِلَلِ. Eating less prevents a lot of diseases. Now, I, amongst many, when I look at people and I see that they hardly get sick, I look at their body from the outside and I could tell that these people not heavy eaters. And I automatically tell myself the reason they're not getting sick is the fact that they are eating less and eating healthy. I myself, I hardly, thanks to Allah, praise to Allah, I hardly see the doctor. Maybe I see him once a year. Because I try to eat as less as I can, or even if not less, at least as healthy as I can. I haven't had a soda for the past 20 years, for example. Not only because, you know, I'm trying to look good, but it's a responsibility upon me and you to take care of this amana, this trust of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I do have my mistakes and I do sometimes overdo things, but at least we're trying to do what? To persevere and fight our way out in this mess that we live in today that we call the fast food chain. So the Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam, again, they say to us, when it comes to cold, even the seasons, at the beginning of winter, they say, try to be safe. Because some people say, oh, now it's just starting to get cold. It's not cold yet. That's all right. Well, that's a problem. The beginning of the coldness, when the winter just comes, that's the most deadly. That's where people always get sick. Have you noticed that? The flu season is at the beginning of winter, not in the middle, not at the end. So they say it's a flu season. Therefore, the Ahl Bayt, they say when that comes, you try to protect yourself. It's starting to get a bit chilly. That is the time where you need to wear a warm clothes. I know you can deal with the cold because it's not really cold, but you need to keep yourself protected. وَتَلَقَوْهُ فِي آخِرَةِ, the Imam says. And at the end, then that's when you start to slowly, slowly relax. فَإِنَّهُ يَفْعَلُ بِالْأَبْدَانِ كَفِعْلِهِ فِي الْأَجَّارِ. This season, they do the same to the body as it does to the trees. When winter comes in, you see the leaves die out and they fall. And as the winter starts to leave, the leaves start to grow a little bit back just before summer hits in. So you can see that the Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam, they tell us that imagine your body was that tree. And what happens to it during winter? It happens the same thing to your body. So you need to take care of your body. Also the Ahl Bayt alayhim as-salam, they go in more depth. They say those, this is a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi as-salam. He says those who cut their nails and they trim their mustaches, obviously if you are a male, from Friday to Friday, he says it saves people from many diseases. And that's just actions that we think make no difference. But the reality is, it does, and it does a lot. Okay, because the nails and the mustache itself, it collects a lot of dirt. Therefore, it needs to be cleaned and cleansed on a weekly basis. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams,
hear the children's cries.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.